My first question is for both of you. What did Béla Bartók do to music?
Well, he was an innovator, certainly, and he changed the musical language because he was part of a generation which was looking for new ways of expression. It's the same generation of Stravinsky, Schoenberg, and everybody found individual new tools to do that. And interestingly, when I look at modern composers, what they are doing, I think of the three, and this is not a criticism of the other two, but I think Bartók's language has been developed most by his successors. So it seems to me like this is the most enduring linguistic innovation. He found a new musical language.
How is his music more or less Hungarian than, for instance, the things that I would say most people think of as Hungarian? The Liszt rhapsodies, the Brahms dances. Those things sort of say Hungarian to average ears.
Hungary is a complicated sort of melting pot, I would say, because what Liszt considered Hungarian was sometimes more gypsy than Hungarian. Occasionally he used certain Hungarian forms in the Verbunkos period, which were considered Hungarian. But Hungary, musically speaking, was very much a melting pot. Viennese influence, little Balkan influence, a lot of gypsy influence. And then Bartók and Kodály wanted to step away from that pastiche, that kind of combination of very different influences. And they thought that the real source, the wonderful new style which they wanted to research and incorporate in their composition was the Hungarian peasant song. And the Hungarian peasant song is different than what we know from the music of Liszt. They went and found the songs, and then Bartók extended his research to other countries, to Slovakia, Romania, even to Arab Turkish territories. So I think what he found was the folklore of Eastern Europe in a broader sense, not only Hungarian, but the Hungarian folklore plays a crucial part. And then he used it as a basis for his new language. And he developed from the Hungarian peasant song something which then became Bartók's style.
Yes, and he became so deeply, you know, involved in this language that first he made arrangements of these peasant songs, and later he would invent melodies and tunes that sound like original peasant music, but they are already his own invention, so it became part of his blood system.
Does that music exist still today? In America, much of our culture is homogenized because of mass media. Do the Hungarian peasant songs, does that culture continue anywhere in Hungary?
Well, I remember in the 50s, when I started as a very small child to hear about it, there was a lot of lamentation that it will disappear because of radio, television, and pop music generally.
People blame the radio for a lot of things.
Yes, and then people will not sing the peasant songs anymore. And strangely enough, even after 60 years later, a lot of people still know many of these songs and recognize and sing them, probably not as habitually as their grandparents, but I think people still know many songs in Hungary, and they know the style, and I notice from my musicians that they immediately feel the style. When in Bartók something pops up which is related, they immediately recognize it.
Mr. Schiff, is that music still alive? Do you encounter it anywhere?
Well, obviously it's alive, and there is a very lively movement to keep it alive. You know, folk music and folk dance, there are professional and amateur groups who practice this tradition. Also, I would add that in Transylvania which is today Romania, but which used to be a very important part of Hungary. And that's where Bartók most of his collecting. I think in Transylvania this is more alive than Hungary proper. I also think that in Transylvania people speak a more beautiful Hungarian than in Budapest, let's say. Wouldn't you agree?
I think yes, but that may be the case in many large cities, that it becomes more blurred, and somewhere in this cleaner, I mean, from a linguistic point of view, cleaner areas like Transylvania. Absolutely, you're right, I agree.
Are those groups dance bands that keep it alive? I would think that people would like to dance to that music more than just for the music's sake itself.
Both. When there is music that they dance to, and there is vocal and purely instrumental music. But the dance is integrated.
Tell me about Bartók as a pianist, Mr. Schiff. Based on your own playing of the works that he wrote really for himself to premiere, what kind of a player was he?
To me, Bartók is the greatest pianist, really. I adore his playing. Luckily, we have a lot of recordings of his. And imagine if we would have recordings of Beethoven playing or Bach playing the organ, they would be invaluable. So luckily to us, Bartók is a great guide, and he shows us how the difference is between a printed score and the realization of it. Bartók is very faithful to the written score, and he was meticulous in dynamics, in phrasing, even putting metronome marks to every little segment of the piece. And yet, how he plays is like parlando, human speech, and we don't talk in equal syllables, do we? I mean, you read something on the written page, and then we accentuate it, and then there is a rise and fall of the phrase and of the sentence. So that's how Bartók plays. Also, he writes these very thick chords, you know, often 8 or 10 notes. So people have this idea that it's very percussive. It's nonsense. People think Bartók's music is percussive. Just listen to him playing. It's never an ugly note, not in the entire output. And he plays those chords arpeggio. The two hands are never really together. They are together on the printed page, but that doesn't matter.
The Bartók concerti have a reputation for being very difficult. What's particularly challenging about playing them?
Certainly difficult. That's correct. Well, there are three very different pieces.
Talk about the second one, since that's the one that we're hearing on this concert.
Well, the second one would be unimaginable without the first, and the first was a very radical piece, and when Bartók performed that, and he encountered great difficulties with that. Orchestras couldn't really master it yet. So when he wrote the second concerto, he said that now I'm going to write a much more accessible concerto, an easier concerto. My God, it's not really easier. However, I think it's a more classically conceived concerto, the second one. It's also revolutionary in a way. Has a lot to do with Stravinsky's music, I think. Also a lot to do with Bach, a Bachian counterpoint. And the first movement is fiendishly difficult, but if you approach it like a Brandenburg concerto of Bach, it has the same rhythmic language, you know, tam ta ta tam ta 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 tam pa pa pam. And you have all the elements of Bachian counterpoint, and you have inversions and augmentations and diminutions. And so it's very interesting that the strings don't even play in the first movement.
Do you use that Bach analogy in talking to the orchestra about this concerto too?
I think that's beautiful. It's certainly very helpful to think about that, because, of course, Bartók's music is sometimes rhythmically difficult, and one needs to overcome that and then play it in a light way where you don't count anymore. And when you don't count the sort of 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, whatever it is, then suddenly you feel this ease and continuity and actually the rhythmic fun of it, what Bach also has in certain movements. I agree. And so Bartók was a very conscientious composer who worked out these, when there are many voices, these polyphonic details. And that reminds me, too, on Bach's music.
You switch up the usual orchestral arrangement on stage sometimes, at least in the concert, the work that you were just rehearsing that we saw. The basses were on risers at the very back of the stage. But you switch things up. Where did those ideas come from, and what have you learned from doing that?
Well, let me reverse this question. I never really understood, why does one need to sit always the same way? What's the point? I mean, each composition is different. The compositions offer different beauties and challenges. For example, in the Bartók Second Piano Concerto, which is mainly chamber music of a brass group with the piano solo, it's natural that the brass instruments should surround the piano. And equally, in certain compositions like the Schubert C major symphony, what we hear after the break, I think the woodwind instruments are the soloists, and they almost have a dialogue with the orchestra, like a kind of concertante unit, eight wind soloists and an orchestra. This is what I hear from the piece. So it's, for me, a natural idea to bring them to the front and let them be heard as soloists. I don't really see the point, what, even if everybody else does it, I still don't understand, why do we stick to the one conventional positioning?
You two have known each other since you were how old?
Pretty young. I don't remember precisely, but...
Before 10.
Something like that. I don't know.
So when you knew Ivan as a youngster, Mr. Schiff, what did you think he was going to be when he grew up?
Budapest is like a small village, and people know each other, and especially, you know, in the musical world. But Ivan comes from a very musical family, and I know the whole family very well, and his brother is also an excellent conductor, and I even went to school with his sister, Esther. We used to go to do the solfège class together. So, and Ivan was a cellist at that time, so, and I knew of, obviously, that he's very musical and very gifted, but he's come a long way.
And Mr. Fischer, this young fellow András, what did you expect to see of him when you knew him as a boy?
Well, actually, there was never any doubt, because I remember in this very early period there were stories and legends about his playing. So he was among the teenagers of Budapest a sensation. And everybody said, András Schiff, well, this is the thing to go and to listen to. So in a way, there is an unbroken admiration I had for his playing from, let's say, the age of 10 until today. I don't think it has ever changed. It has developed, of course. But he is right. Budapest was a small village, and we knew each other, and everybody said, was raving about him when he was, let's say, 10, 12 years old.
Gentlemen, I thank you both very much. It's been a real honor to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.